I can't hear myself. Can you hear me? No. I have no idea. Hello, hello. Testing, testing. Still nothing, still nothing. Hey, whoa. Now too much. I think you can turn that down a little bit. We still got some feedback on. Okay, let's see. Good? All right, now we're good. I'm generally loud enough anyway. My students would like to be able to turn my mic off. Let us go ahead and bring the April Senate meeting to order. And so welcome to everybody. We have a lot of people here today. Our first order of business is to go ahead and approve the March meeting minutes as posted. So I have a motion to approve those minutes. And a second?
Second.
All right. And is there any discussion on those minutes? Okay, hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the March meeting minutes as posted, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. Just really quickly, I know we've got a lot of guests here today, new senators here today. If you're a new senator, new incoming senator, would you please stand up? New incoming senators, please stand up for me, please. All right, thanks very much. And welcome, and if we have any, do we have any brand new senators, by the way? Absolutely brand new senators, have never done Senate before. You'd stand up here if you're a newbie. All right. Hey. Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. I would like you to keep in mind, so you can be happy about this, your term does not start until August 1st, so you're not actually eligible to vote on anything today. So new senators, you'll not be able to vote on anything today or in our May meeting. Old senators, those of you who are going off of Senate this term, please keep in mind that this meeting and May are yet to happen under your term. So we're still responsible for a couple of meetings yet before you are free. So thanks very much. And we will, of course, be getting to the caucusing and the elections a little bit later on. We've got quite an agenda. So hopefully this will give you a good experience about what Senate is. I will just go ahead and make a couple of announcements. If I get my notes over here. First off, we are working currently on, the SEC is working on, I should say, the Provost Advisory Committees on keys and space and recognition. You've seen some emails come out about those. At the last SEC meeting, we finally got some information down. We've kind of got the charge of each one of the committees now, and so we're going to be able to work to finally select members off of those lists that we've collected. We'll do that in the May SEC meeting. Also, speaking of committees, we have a number of university-wide committees that we have senators on. Unfortunately, we've not had a comprehensive list of those university committees. So I'm working to make a comprehensive list of those university committees. I've gathered together a whole host of them, but I'll probably be sending out an email to the Senate list pretty soon to ask for some information. So if you are on any university-wide Senate university-wide committees as a Senate member, or if you are aware of any, just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. I'll be emailing you and kind of asking for some information about that so that we can create this comprehensive listing. So just keep an eye out for that. By the way, I just kind of want to make a quick announcement as we get ready to think about transitioning our senators after this term and into the new term. Senate is a great experience. And I will say this, I've learned more in my year as chair of the Senate this past term, or almost year now, than I did about university governance, in particular, about governance at this institution in my entire decade of working at Western Kentucky University previous. So it is a great learning experience. You will learn a lot, and faculty need to be able to provide a collective voice and a strong voice, and through our current governance system, this is the way to do it, is through University Senate. So please keep in mind, speak out, read through the documents. It's an important job, but it's also a rewarding job for you. Okay, that's all for my report. Now our Vice Chair, Jennifer Hanley.
I have nothing to report.
Heidi Alvarez, our Secretary.
Hi, everybody. The sign-in sheet is floating around. We started over there. Usually I start it over at this end, so just keep it moving. And if you miss it, please come visit me at the end of the meeting. Thanks.
Reminder on behalf of Heidi, if you're motioning or seconding a motion, to please say your last name clearly so we can mark it in the minutes.
Yes, try to use the microphones that are at the tables, please. I know we can sometimes get excited and not use those, but it is great for us to be able to hear what you're saying. Molly.
No report.
Hey, thank you very much. All right. Eric Reed.
Hello, I have a brief announcement I'd like to share with you. As you know, we have an AAUP campus chapter, and we've been somewhat active this year, although not quite as active as I'd like us to be. One thing I've been trying to do to develop the AAUP is to make it a source for discussion of all kinds of ideas of interest to the faculty. And so to that purpose, the folks who are involved in AAUP and I have created some online forums, including a blog, a Facebook site, and a Twitter feed that we have been feeding for the last 2 or 3 months. I didn't want to announce it before we actually had any content on all these things because that would be a little bit pathetic. So for the last few months, I've been posting some things on our blogs, and the more recent contributions have come from other faculty. Our illustrious Senate chair has contributed one. Eric Bain-Selbo has contributed a recent one. We have some other faculty who are in the queue. But I'd encourage you to visit these sites. They're really a place for discussion of all kinds of ideas of interest to the faculty, not just things we talk about here at Senate. Budget, faculty responsibilities, student life, really all kinds of things have been touched on so far. And you can find them just by either on Facebook, searching AAUPWKU, or Googling the same thing, and you'll find the blog. So if you have any questions, just let me know. If you'd like to contribute something, let me know, and I'll tell you the basic parameters.
Thanks very much, Eric. Before we get to our advisory panel and the reports from the advisory panel, if no one objects, we do have a guest here today. Is there any objection from the advisory panel, first and foremost, in changing the order? Yes, it is. Yes. Okay. Is there any objection to bringing forward our informational item that we have at the end here? Because we have invited WKU General Counsel Ms. Deborah Wilkins to speak to us. If you all will recall, back in November and then again in February, we have discussed some IT policies. In particular, in November, we had quite a bit of discussion with Bob Owen here, and it was in reference to these two policies that I've posted on the agenda there, 5.5020, 5.5050, and there was particular wording that was in there that I think was concerning to some of the faculty, and so just to kind of went back through the minutes and thinking about what the conversations that we had, and it was in particular to address the issues of when general counsel is able to request information, and then the fact that there is no log of that information and those requests. So those were the items in particular that I recall that were brought up in that Senate meeting in November. And so we have invited Ms. Wilkins to come and speak to us and discuss a little bit about that. So you can go either place that you would like. Okay, so just step up to the microphone, and we can. If you have anything to say, first and foremost, if you have anything to address regarding that, the open records policy or the open records idea behind creating a log of requests that the general counsel might make into electronic records.
Well, let me just start out. Can everybody hear me? Okay.
Actually, we can.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me come up here.
Yeah, this one might be a little better.
First of all, the WKU's email system is a piece of property that belongs to the state of Kentucky. And they start with the premise, the state starts with the premise that everything on that system is also the property of the university and the state of Kentucky. So there really is no privacy interest in email that's coming to a WKU.edu address, and that goes for my email, the president's email, it's across the board. Now, the only time that I have an occasion, first of all, I never want to read email. I don't even like to read my own email. But the only time that I would request it is if I'm issued, I receive a subpoena for that information. I've been here a little over 21 years. The only time I have been in receipt of a subpoena for email was probably when we were doing, when we had the file the downloading of music. We got a number of subpoenas to produce IP addresses and electronic information. It's all student related. Typically, I get requests for production of documents as part of a civil suit that the university is involved in. An example would be we have a suit, a former employee suing the university for race discrimination. And just about 2 weeks ago, her attorney requested that we produce any email that referenced or used the phrase people admin. People admin was a software project that we were investigating, purchasing, and using at the university to track our human resources functions. We ended up not purchasing it and using it, but she was involved in that, thought that these emails were relevant, and under the rules of discovery, we have to produce them. And we did. We produced 950 or so email, put them on a CD and our flash drive, and sent them to her. And the way we were able to find those is IT can go into our system and search that phrase, and then it pulls up all the email. I did notify the people that I thought might be on that, might be involved in that project, because at that time we had a committee, HR director, of course, purchasing officers. They didn't have any concern about it, and I didn't either. But we just don't get a lot of requests for email, and I don't look at email unless it's something like that. So I know you all had some questions or concerns. Yes.
Aaron Wickman here. Thank you very much for coming and talking with us. First of all, I'm really pleased to hear how carefully that you do access this material. That said, it would be a wonderful morale boost in a post-Snowden age where government budgets seem to be ever-shrinking. People always find something to fight over and be paranoid about, that it would be very nice if the IP addresses and or target individuals could be logged. And if it came from, you know, say a subpoena or a law enforcement request, maybe there would have to be some redaction that went on. But it sounds like, especially given the rarity with which these things are being accessed, it would be a very inexpensive way to really improve people's confidence in our leadership, I think. Do you think it's possible to maintain such a log and make it available, say, to a Senate subcommittee?
A log of each time email is produced?
No. You obviously know a great deal more about this than I do.
Okay.
But I was thinking more a log that logged who the target of these information requests were and the number of times discrete requests that had come in for information about a particular target.
Well, again, the only ones I would deal with would be if it's a subpoena, and I've not had a subpoena for employee email, or a request as part of a civil suit.
Now
and in 20 years, we've only had maybe three for
that's wonderful.
Email.
I mean, that's great. So are there ones that other people would be dealing with?
I'm not aware of anything.
It would be wonderful if we could capture that. It sounds like there will be nothing in this database, and I love that idea.
Okay.
I mean, it's like a student who turns in a blank paper. I mean, it's a bummer, but I don't have to grade it.
Right.
So
I can say that if we do get a request, if a faculty member has passed away, his family or her family will often want to see if there's anything personal in there that they can keep. And in those instances, once we get some evidence that the person asking is legally able to look at that information, they're the executor of the estate or something like that, then we will have someone in IT go through the email, pull out what is purely business-related, student-related, student information, and then put all of the personal information on a flash drive for the family member. We've had unfortunately, we've lost quite a few employees over the last 5 or 6 years. So we've had half dozen or so of those. In that case, there's no one to notify because the holder of the account's deceased. Occasionally, we will have, we've had rare instances where someone leaves, resigns, of course, and leaves, and their supervisor has to get in. I don't think this is a faculty situation. This is more of a staff situation. I have to get in and see, you know, did they respond to emails?
I can see there are many, many very good reasons to want to access these records.
The point I'm trying to get at is we do not look at a person's email who's actively working without telling them. I mean, I can't think of a situation where we would do
that. Well, the wording of the policy says unless it's inappropriate, impractical, or there was something else in there. But in everyday English, that is... Unless we don't want to.
Right. And let me say, I'm not aware of a circumstance where that has happened, but let's say we have information that leads us to believe that Dr. Emsley is going to go off the deep end and get violent, and we need to look at his email. It's probably not going to do much good for me to call Gordon and say, well, look at your email because we have information that you may be getting ready to engage in some misconduct.
Sure.
That would be a situation where they're talking about inappropriate or, you know, where we may need to see what he's, what this person's planning before we let them know we're concerned with their activities. And again, it's not happened in the 20 years I've been here, but I would never say never. I hope it never does.
Well, I can say I speak for quite a few people, I think, when I say that people want to know that this access is not being abused and that it could not be abused for personal reasons or vendetta-type reasons. You know, in general, we have a great reputation. This is something that would strengthen that.
Well, you know, in this day and age when the IRS agents are looking at our tax returns and you know, NSA's listening in on our phone calls, I can't say that no one would ever inappropriately look at an email account.
Of course.
My best advice is if you've got personal information, get you a Gmail or a Yahoo or whatever and send it that way.
So are you saying that you're categorically opposed to keeping a log of these requests?
I can tell you my list in five sentences. I'm not sure I can commit for anybody else. I'm not comfortable doing that.
So you're saying you are opposed or you aren't?
I'm not opposed to keeping a log of when I have to access email.
Uh-huh. Okay. I think
One point of clarification. There have been occasions where we've had students who have complained that professor has not responded to their email or an advisor gave them inappropriate advice, and I have accessed student accounts to see what mail came into the student's mail account. Do not access the employees, but it's very easy to go in to a student's account if they didn't get anything.
Sure.
And
so it sounds
just
like
till you know, in every
reasons.
Instance, I found out they did get what they said they didn't get. So that has been very helpful to us. Most of the time, students don't read what they're sent, or they don't pay attention to it. So.
Well. Okay. Well.
And I'll tell the student. I'll send them a letter and say, "Well, here's the email that went into your account and shows you opened it at 9:15 p.m. on September 30th."
So you must have some concern about keeping a log. It sounds like some people would.
I have a concern generally with keeping a lot of paper. I mean, I'm an attorney. Every time we get in a situation, everybody wants all our paper.
Sure, sure.
So if the university is keeping a log of everyone who may have their email accessed, I don't know how that would be used against the employee or the university.
I think for most of us, it would more transparency would just help increase our faith in university governance.
My commitment would be that your email would not be accessed without me notifying you, except if it's a matter of life safety.
But you won't record that. You're saying you're not. You personally are willing to do
yes.
it.
Yes.
So, okay, thank you.
So could we get something of that on record, maybe association with IT, saying that is
sure.
part of the policy, that an employee's information would not be accessed without without you notifying them ahead of time, or that was being done?
Well, that would be really appreciated.
Don't hold your breath waiting to hear from me, because I don't get very many.
So then we can work with IT, maybe with Bob Owen, and to try and incorporate that into
sure.
one of these policies.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Yes.
I'm Mark Reeves.
Hey, Mark.
Hello. I'm very happy to hear that these are infrequent occurrences. I had little doubt that they were. I guess, kind of similar to the previous senator, my concern is not so much current practice as what's written in the policy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said that really the only instances where this happens are subpoenas and requests from faculty to look at student emails. But the way the policy 5.5020 is written, these can be commandeered as deemed necessary to address a given situation, which
I apologize,
seems.
I didn't bring 5.20 mm-hmm. with me. Can you read what you're...
Sure, it's in part two, policy, second paragraph.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the highlight. Can access sensor commandeering office going on?
I guess my concern is I'd like to see a definition for a given situation. That just seems pretty general, you know, where, you know, I share the concern about the log, and I think, it's not an... you know, insinuation that anything has been done or necessarily would be done is just an assurance that we would know why a certain thing would be done and that there would be a record of that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It does. I'll be happy to talk with Dr. Owen about that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Will you all be looking at maybe changing the policy?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know how long it will take. Our policy process is kind of slow. But
well, the reason I asked about it is because when I asked him about that, he said to talk to you. So
great.
So that was why we
so
went through this.
Here.
Yes.
Got it. Thanks, Bob.
So I would appreciate you looking into that.
Okay.
All right. Yes.
Holly Payne, Communication. I was just curious. You said that you can remember instances and that you could list them and keep a log. But do all requests come through you, or are there other entities on campus that would access for any reason?
Everything, it seems like, comes to me. Of course, I get all the legal requests, any kind of a subpoena or a court order. We haven't gotten court orders or subpoenas for electronic information except when they were going through the music downloading phase. And those were all federal grand jury, and it all involved students. Most of the time, we didn't even know who the student was. They just had an IP address, and what they wanted was the student, the name attached to that IT address. So if we get all open records requests come to me. The only open records request for email we've gotten is when the president, I think for a period of time, was a member of the Bowl BCS President's Committee or something, and we got a request from... it's either ESPN or USA Today for email where they were talking about the bowl championship series. That's the only one I can open records request I can remember in 20 years.
Are there any
and it was
questions?
Boring.
Any other questions?
If you have anything else that you think about, feel free to email me or call me. And I will be happy to answer your questions. If you all want to write down my password, I'll let you look at my email. You had a question. You were going to ask something.
Oh, every once in a while, well, you know, we hear about the rogue FBI agent who starts stalking his exes using government databases, et cetera. Is there a way that you can think of that we could capture those kinds of requests? Because that's what we're really concerned about here, I think, is that someone getting that information, using it for inappropriate purposes. Obviously, lots of people have information to lots of have access to lots of sensitive information, but that I think is many people's concern.
Yes, the answer is yes. And again, our IT people would not produce anything like that without contacting me. And I'm not going to produce anything until I see and verify the credentials of this person and the subpoena or the court order that he's presenting. I know the agents in this area personally, so it's going to be odd for them to send somebody I don't know.
I'm not suggesting actual agents. I'm suggesting random people that might be able to talk somebody into giving them certain access to databases.
I will be shocked if that happens, because IT, as you've seen, refers everyone to me. That includes mom and dad who can't get in to pay their son or daughter's tuition. I mean, I get all of them.
Okay, well, thank you.
Anything final?
All right. The IT people are really paranoid. I mean, they won't give anything to people without asking.
Hey, I'd just like to say thank you for coming and speaking to us.
I understand how everybody feels, and if you have any questions, just call
me. Thank you.
Text me.
We'll look forward to the new policy.
Thanks. I'll be in touch with you then about the policy. Okay. Thanks very much for joining us. All right, and I appreciate you all, your willingness to change around our agenda a little bit for our guests. So back to our regularly scheduled program. We have our advisory panel and Regent Minter.
Hey, folks. If you do have any further concerns about privacy and all that mumbling suggests that you might, please feel free to get hold of me as well. Okay, happy to talk with you about any of these concerns, because not everybody wants to get on the mic and talk about privacy issues, do we? So, and get them on tape. To the Board of Regents issues. The Board of Regents meets tomorrow morning at 9 in the Regents Room down in Mass Media Technology. And it should be fairly short. We should conclude before lunch. But I would be remiss if I didn't say that tomorrow I get to vote on something that is very meaningful to the faculty and very happy news indeed. This is the approval of tenure and promotion actions for our colleagues, some of whom will become associate professors on July 1st, tenured professors, and the approval of several promotions of associate professors to full rank. So let me take this opportunity to congratulate you in advance of tomorrow's vote on these milestones in your professional lives and in the intellectual life of this community. Well done, everybody. At last month's board meetings, at the committee meetings, we heard reports from many groups, although one report that we did not hear fully was the enrollment report. It was not yet complete because our meeting was held on Census Day, and Provost Emsley can fill you in on this in his report. Something else that's interesting, and perhaps internal audit is not always the most interesting subject to non-accountants, but this will interest you greatly. The internal auditor, who has been Bailey Jordan of Grant Thornton, we've been using an outsource company as of late, gave the university a fairly clean bill of health for internal controls. However, the audit has determined that WKU has no formal whistleblower procedure. I think some of you probably already knew that. And the audit found that that has to be addressed immediately as of May 2014. So by May 2014, the university must have a proper whistleblower procedure in place, and it must protect the individual's identity beyond any question. So how do you do that? You obviously don't have an anonymous email. It's not going to work. So keep your eyes open. But what the internal auditor suggested, and this sounds absolutely right, is that the best way to have controls for privacy is to have a third party nowhere near this campus with a 1-800 number. And that 1-800 number would be the intake that would ensure beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are compliant with federal whistleblower statutes and that the identities of whistleblowers are protected. That is a very good thing. And it's going to be done the right way and very quickly. So if you have any questions about that, you know where to find me. If you want to get me off email, that's fine too. Moving on to the legislative report. The General Assembly has now adjourned, and the news could be a lot worse than it is. The final cut to WKU state funding is a 1.5% budget cut instead of 2.5% budget cut, which saved WKU $750,000 of what was originally proposed as a cut. So you can put that back. On the issue of state-funded mandates to KERS, which is the Staff Retirement Program, the governor's budget included a 50% increase in what we had to do for our base budgets. Lawmakers agreed, and that's a cost avoidance for us. So we now do not have to pay what would have been an extra $1.3 million. Now, for academics, there is some good news. We welcome the news that WKU will receive funding for the completion of the science complex at long last, fully funded state bond. That's the kind we like. And it also commits $2 million to fully fund the expansion of the Gatton Academy by 80 students. And for those who ask, but what about the physical facility where they live in Schneider Hall, that will be funded completely by a private donor. Also a good thing. So it could be a lot worse. However, this doesn't mean that we should give our lawmakers a pass, and we should take every opportunity to remind them that without significant tax reform in this state, we're going to face this discussion at every legislative session. And you're going to get into these false dichotomies where it's set up that you can't fund higher education unless you cut K-12. Therefore, no, you give the money to K-12, right? Nobody wants to cut education. So until we quit setting up these false dichotomies and actually establish a stable revenue stream, then we're just going to have this conversation every time the legislature meets. That's not okay. It's not in the best interest of not only this university, but of the entire Commonwealth of Kentucky. So please have those conversations when you see your legislators. On May the 3rd, I will represent WKU's AAUP chapter at the state AAUP meeting, and I'm also going to appear on a panel discussion about faculty leadership. I'm extremely eager to hear the keynote address, which is from George Tilda, the editor of the 2015 AAUP Red Book, and he is a member of the Committee on Academic Freedom and Tenure. He's going to talk about faculty communication with governing boards, seems timely. And if you haven't yet joined and would like to do so, then please find Dr. Reed. And if he or we have not convinced you yet of how important the AAUP's work is to protect academic freedom and to advocate for faculty and students, then you should check out their latest report, which came out in March. And it was on the front page of Inside Higher Ed, if you get that. Its title, Losing Focus, the annual report on the state of the profession, is pretty revealing. And my report, which is going to be posted later today, has the link to the full report and to the Inside Higher Education story. Short version. It addresses the growth of administrators, institutional priorities and spending, athletic spending and its impact on the academic mission. And their data shows very clearly that one of the great myths that we are told about big-time athletics is how it has an advertising benefit. You make the Sweet 16, next thing you know, your applications are through the roof the next year. I've heard people repeating those tropes about University of Louisville, University of Kentucky. This absolutely shoots those down. And the author of that section is actually a professor of economics and, you don't see this combination too often, and the men's rugby coach. coach at Hampden-Sydney College. So this is an internalist critique. And what the report points out is something else that I talked to you about last month. While sometimes we justify big head coaching salaries by saying it all comes from private monies, it's not coming out of base budget, it points out what I mentioned last month, which is you still have an arms race for all these assistant coaches. I mentioned last time that it's going to be $1.6 million of compensation for the football staff next year, highest payroll for that group ever. And this is a national phenomenon, as the data shows. They use the phrase institutional arms race, and if they point out that higher education on the whole is losing this one, because every time you do this, then you are taking money out of WKU base budget in this case, because our athletics department is not self-supporting. You have student fees. They are, you know, expensive. Fees are expensive, cost more than the annual tuition increases by a long shot, and all of that money is going to fund what this report shows is increasing disparity between spending on student athletes and the rest of the student population. In fact, their numbers are far more damning than those presented by the Knight Commission. So in short, someone is paying for the party. And it's all of us. So as we wind down our academic year, I want to thank you for the great work that you do. And as we welcome our new senators today, I urge all of you to commit to step up and take an active role in faculty governance, because our collective voices have never been more important than they are right now. And you may feel like we never get anywhere, and I understand that feeling well, but we do. And silence equals acquiescence, and we can't do that because, again, we're the ones paying for the party. I sent Margaret the report to upload to the Senate page, but it's at aaup.org, and it's called Losing Focus, the annual report on the state of the profession.
Is there any comment on the NCAA and the unionization of sport athletes?
This is about a 70-page report, and every one of those topics is covered. Not the unionization issue. What it's really talking about are the decisions we make, whether it's growing, administrative positions, where you're allocating the money, and, you know, addressing some of these long-held myths about why you continue to double and triple down on spending when your program's not making any money in athletics. So please do check it out.
Thanks very much, Patty. And Provost Emsley?
Okay. Heidi, you okay?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, thanks. I'm going to echo a little bit of what Patty said later, but first, the recommendations, all four of them from the last Senate meeting, one from Graduate Council, two from UCC, one on Curriculum Matters, one on Policy, and Recommendation 0303 in the Colonnade Program courses, all approved. Most of you will have read my communique from last week on the budget. It doesn't tell quite the whole story, but it tells as much as I was able to say. In a nutshell, despite the challenges that we face, the 1.5% budget cut from the state, increasing costs in health care and retirement, we were nevertheless able to make a budget for next year, which not only includes a modest compensation program, you'll hear more about that later, but also, more importantly, I think preserves the staffing plan. The deans have been authorized to fill all of their phase one vacancies, which is up to 75% of vacancies in your college. To close out this particular fiscal year with a shortfall in tuition funds collected by Central, I want to emphasize that is not necessarily a shortfall in overall tuition revenue. We've been directing tuition revenue to other programs, such as the programs at the Health Sciences Complex, doctoral programs, and so forth. So Central doesn't collect all of our tuition revenue anymore. It's still a hole that has to be filled, but the tuition revenue as a whole for the university is not as down as that $3.1 million number that you may have heard. Nevertheless, we had to fill that, and we did so using divisional carry forward funds, approximately two-thirds of it in my own office, and the other one-third spread amongst the colleges. So on average, each college only received about one-half of their last installment. We did carry forward installments three times a year, and so the colleges got a full first installment, a full second installment, and about one-half of their third installment, so about 85% in all. The provost budget council has informed me that they consider the carry forward balances in the colleges quite healthy, and I think they're still quite healthy. So how did we reduce the budget? We did eliminate a number of faculty positions. It was painful, but it had to be done. All these were the faculty positions that we put on hold about a year ago in response to the enrollment decline. I believe it's about 26 or 27 faculty positions that basically are no longer lines in the budget. Nevertheless, despite that, our ratio of professorial faculty to 1,000 FTE students started off at 33-1 and now exceeds 36-1. So the number of faculty per student is still increasing. We also reduced some of the budget from the summer school, and I want to make it very clear that that's just a reduction in the starting budget for the summer school. Summer school is a revenue-dependent unit. It generates funds from tuition paid from students taking courses. Summer school enrollment is up. We expect that revenue to increase accordingly. And the main thing for faculty is that there is no change whatsoever to either the summer school schedule or to the compensation for faculty who participate in summer or winter term activities. We get a little bit of additional revenue. We had several what we call incubator programs in DLO, the most notable of which was probably the RNBSN online program, which was paid for, again, it's like a tuition paid to DLO, DLO paying the departments to pay the faculty. When an incubator program gets healthy enough to stand on its own feet, we move it into the base budget, and we did that with that program and two or three other ones, in the course of which I believe four new faculty lines were created, six new staff lines, and a little bit of operating money for the colleges and departments concerned. After all that was said and done, there was still dollars left over, of which some went to the central budget cut, some were retained in academic affairs, and I applied those funds to the academic affairs side of the budget cut. And last but not least, in terms of the tuition going other places, fiscal 15, the next one coming up, will be the first year in which we start recouping some of the tuition that goes to the programs at the Health Sciences Complex, the BSN Growth, the DNP, and the DPT. For this fiscal year, they received 100% of that tuition. Next year, they'll receive 95% of it, and it will continue to decrease down to 70%, which is the standard 70-30 split that we like to use. So that represented about $160,000 of currently unbudgeted tuition revenue, which when we add that, it's not a budget cut, it's a revenue increase, but has the effect of reducing the size of the problem. So again, that's how we did it. The main message for the faculty is the staffing plan is alive and well. We're moving forward with searches. We have gained faculty positions during the course of the year. And the DLO distributions, these one-time recurring distributions that we disburse to colleges every fall, will continue, and I expect they will continue at about the same or possibly even more than their current levels. This year it was about $3.1 million that we distributed in one-time funds to the various colleges and units, and that we will continue. We did not have to dig into that. As I mentioned, the Provost Budget Council, we've met about four times, I believe, and they've been pretty productive meetings. And the last one was with President Ramsdell, and we discussed not so much the current budget issue as much long-term planning to develop a long-term strategy to include variables for merit raises and so forth. That unit will continue its work. We will analyze, for example, data I've started analyzing myself on how our benchmark institutions distribute their dollars. One number that I can say is that we are right at the middle of our benchmarks. There are nine above us and nine below us in terms of the percentage of our dollars per FTE that we spend on instruction, as denoted by the iPads categories. But if you look at dollars spent on instruction, we're quite a bit lower on our benchmarks, and that's simply because our benchmarks have more total dollars in their budget than we do. We're going to drill down into that data and see if we understand a little better how our benchmark institutions with similar faculty-student ratios, similar other things, can have salaries that are significantly higher than the salaries at WKU. Hopefully, by understanding how they do it, we'll be able to address it ourselves. As Patty said, the board will meet tomorrow. On the academic affairs agenda are several action items. There's, you know, six related to programs. There's some emeritus faculty action items. And as Patty said, on the Finance and Budget Committee later, a variety of faculty actions related to tenure and promotion. After the board meeting is over, I'll be distributing an email to the campus explaining what all these board actions were and a list of the names of those faculty members receiving promotion and tenure, so you can congratulate them along with me. House Bill 333 was the bill that would have restricted participation in the transitional retirement program to faculty members 60 years and over at the first day of retirement. It would have said that anybody under the age of 60 on the first day of retirement would have had to leave the university for a period of time, and that there could have been no prior arrangement for rehiring of that individual in either a full-time or part-time capacity. House Bill 333 did not passed the Senate. It was not signed into law. So as of this point in time, we're still business as usual. Any faculty member, irrespective of age, who chooses to retire may elect to participate in the transitional retirement program. We will be submitting a change to the board for approval that would extend, formally extend, the transitional retirement program to faculty who participate in our optional retirement program. The way it's currently written, only individuals in the KTRS program participate. So we're going to propose that that privilege be extended to faculty in the optional retirement program as well. Faculty Awards Dinner is next week. We'll honor the college awardees, and the committees are meeting this week to select the university awardees. Last but by no means least, if you read your newspaper yesterday, there was a major event about 100 miles west of here or so. A Mid-Continent University is closing its doors on June 30th. All the staff were let go. They were released. The only staff member is currently an acting president. They will have a commencement ceremony on May 10, at which they will graduate approximately 200 or 300 of their graduating seniors. That will leave about 1,800 students midway through the degree programs looking for a place to finish their degree. And although they are close to Murray, a large fraction of their students take online programs, and online programs we do very well. So, as of tomorrow, this message will be in Mayfield, Kentucky, all over the place. Complete your degree here. We have we'll apply appropriate scholarship programs. The Red Tails, the Spirit Makes the Master, to match our cost to their cost, which is about $360 a credit hour. We'll waive application fees. And for their students in their associate degree programs, we will try and route them through our joint admissions agreement and our community colleges to the west of here, Madisonville, Hopkinsville, and so forth. So it's been a busy day or so, but we're on this, and we expect a significant increase in influx of students as a result. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Emsley. Kiana Boca, Ms. Boca.
Hello, everyone. First off, congratulations to all the new University Senate senators. Our own Student Government Association elections were last week, April 8th and 9th, and the new executive officers and senators for the fall semester were elected. This past Tuesday, we had President Ransdell join us for an open forum, and all students were invited, and a student email was sent out and advertised, and we had a good turnout of students and a lot of great questions. It was an opportunity for students to engage in discussions and ask questions with the chief administrator on campus, ask the president directly what they wanted to know with student-related issues, and there was a lot of great things. SGA, we proposed him to speak on a few topics at first. It had to do with the budget cuts, enrollment and retention, and fall semester tuition increases. So those were main topics that were discussed. And also, we discussed how to better integrate international students. Veterans were represented there. They for student benefits and privatization of health services. It was a great open forum overall, and a lot of discussion came from it afterwards. On April 29th, the CPE will announce the tuition cap for the state, and a lot will affect our student tuition increase, as well as the budget for the next fiscal year based off of that. I look forward to the board meeting on Friday. Next week, we have a couple SGA events. The Campus Community Garden will have its first event at the Office of Sustainability, and SGA will be the first organization to participate in that. That was an idea and a project that was started last semester through SGA and the Office of Sustainability and some graduate students, and kind of grew from that and took on this project. And essentially, the Campus Community Garden will be open to students, faculty, staff, anyone on campus to utilize it, to grow something, to take things from it, plants or flowers or herbs, spices, vegetables, fruits, anything. So it's going to be a great thing to look forward to. And then also we'll have a campus safety walk, which is always important. And that's about it. This is my last report to the University Senate for this year. I'm graduating in May, and the new president of Student Government Association of the association will be here at the next meeting in May. And it's been a pleasure joining you all. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Boca, and thanks very much. We've enjoyed having you here. All right. Moving on to our standing committee reports and recommendations. Graduate Council report.
Yes, with one correction on the Graduate Council report, the date is March 20th, not March 13th. That was an error, but I move approval of the March 20th Graduate Council report.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that Graduate Council report? Okay, hearing no discussion, all those in favor, graduate faculty only, please vote on Graduate Council reports. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. We do have a policy item as well from Graduate Council.
Yes, I move approval of the proposal to revise the academic policy on repeating courses.
Okay, any discussion on this? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the policy item from the Graduate Council, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. And moving on to the UCC report.
I move approval of the March 27th University Curriculum Committee report.
And there were no changes this time around.
No changes. Fingers crossed.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I shouldn't have said that yet, knock on wood. Is there any discussion on that UCC report? All right, excellent. Hearing none, all those in favor of approval of that UCC report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Oh, and an abstention. Thank you. No report from academic quality. However, we do have a couple of items from faculty welfare and professional responsibility. Tucker?
I move to approve the faculty welfare report from the April meeting.
Okay. Any discussion on that faculty welfare report? Hearing none, all those in favor of the report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And then we did have a resolution as well.
Quick background about the resolution. This stemmed from a conversation about the liberal arts and sciences move. We, in our discussions, and this was in the report, we discussed that most of the issues that faculty members had may have been ironed out, averted, or otherwise taken care of had this move been a bit more open air, shall we say. A lot of the issues could have been handled on the front end rather than surprise, let's try to take care of all the issues and details now. So in that discussion, it came up that South Campus had been affected or changed, had gone through several changes over the last 5, 6, 7 years that were not faculty led, or, and quite the contrary, they were surprises to the faculty, and the faculty was only informed of these major changes on the back end, and so it just began a pretty good discussion about, you know, we would just like more clarity, more front end conversation about changes that affect faculty, that affect students, and the whole education process in general. There are a number of departments that are going through changes, and that's understandable. I mean, we all kind of, our positions here are kind of fluid, our departments are kind of fluid, and a lot of changes happen, but many of the changes that take place are faculty led. I mean, they're faculty driven, and done not with only the consent of the faculty, but because the faculty want these changes, they seek these changes. A lot of the changes that have happened at South Campus have been quite the opposite, and so this resolution only speaks to a lot of the changes that have happened. Some of those changes being the dissolution of the big community, you know, what was the community college, the removal of the director position, you know, that happened as a result of the dissolution of the community college, which then took all of the departments that were used to being a single unit and sharing resources and things like this, to now separate departments that seem to really just fight for resources. And it was being a member of the South Campus faculty, it was a strange process. I was fairly new at the time, but it was interesting to see how this all happened. It was divide, and I mean, you know, at the risk of sounding very fringe, it seemed very divide and conquer, right? You remove the leadership, you remove their name, and then you make them several departments, which then have to fight and infight for resources. So that change, for whatever the reason was for that change, I think is the reason this resolution occurs, right? The reason we push forward this resolution. If there was a change, or if there was a long-term plan that had taken place a long time ago, we just want to know what that was. There have been a lot of meetings with administration where this had been asked, and had never a rationale for why these changes occurred never really took place. And to give you some more of the changes, the dissolution of the community college, the removal of the director, we all know about the dissolution of the liberal arts and sciences department. The professional studies department that was at South Campus is now at Main Campus. So there have been physical changes, physical movement of faculty and departments, disillusionment of departments. There have been changes in administration and staffing that all came suddenly and without any warning, and everyone was just asked to deal. So this resolution just asks, basically, was there a long-term plan that seemed to minimize and reduce the footprint of South Campus? Is there a long-term plan that continues, and what is that? We as South Campus faculty would like to be self-directed and driven in the changes, or at least included in those changes. And if there is a long-term plan, we just want to know what that is so we can at least accept it, deal with it, rather than it just being, hey, here's another one, right? We were recently informed, the academic support department was recently informed that we'll no longer be an academic support department, we'll be the School of University Studies, which sounds like just a name change, but there also is a removal of a department head, and then a new possible search or for a new director. So there are a lot of changes that we've been dealing with, and this just asks, was there a long-term plan? We would like to know what it is so we can self-direct changes that are at least in alignment with that plan. All right, so.
Thank you, Tucker. Can I get a motion to approve?
Sure. So I move to approve that resolution on the South Campus long-term plan.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this resolution pertaining to South Campus? All right. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of this resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much. There is no report from General Education. We do have Colonnade Implementation Committee. We do have a report from them.
Robert Idle, I move approval of the report from the Colonnade Implementation Committee.
Okay. Could you just give just a very brief...
It has always been, we've always known that the charter was going to have to be changed to accommodate the new Colonnade program because the Gen Ed Task Force recommendation was for a restructuring of the governance process for the program. It was delayed because there was the Task Force on Faculty Governance, and that report has now been cast into the outer darkness, unloved and unmourned. But that meant we had delayed to actually come forward with a suggestion, so we've asked for another year. But as a transition period, the Implementation Committee and the Gen Ed Committee will meet together for the coming year and come forward with a recommendation for a new governance structure.
Absolutely. I just asked for that clarification. I think it's important when we do our caucusing a little bit later on and do our General Education Committee. Thank you very much. Is there any discussion over this Colonnade Implementation Committee report? All right. Yes.
Julie Shadowin, I just have a question about the merger of the two committees for next year. Does this mean now that Colonnade is going to go through the curriculum process, or will it still mean separate and apart?
As far as I understand, right now it is still a separate entity. Colonnade is still, because it has not gone through the charter revision, and so until we get a charter revision approved, Colonnade is still actually a separate committee.
I understand it's a separate committee, but
it's still not technically a standing committee of Senate and a part of the official process, I guess.
So even though they're going to be kind of merged for all practical purposes?
Yeah, it's not official yet. That is my understanding of this, and maybe...
Well, the Colonnade Committee does not consider any course that has not been created and approved through the curricular process, all the way through the UCC and the Senate. We simply consider courses already exist, whether they'll be included in the Colonnade program. So, in that regard, it does take on many of the duties of the old Gen Ed, but. The Colonnade Committee also has been much more rigorous about treating it as a program rather than a ragbag of courses. And that's what needs to be worked out in the coming year, is how can we put a structure in place that will continue that.
Thank you. Does that help clarify? All right. Is there any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of approval of the Colonnade Implementation Committee report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. All right. We don't have any old business in place, but we do have quite a few items of new business. First up are Colonnade courses for approval.
I move approval of the Colonnade courses.
Okay. And we do have a slate of those. Can we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion over these Colonnade course items? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of approval of the slate of Colonnade courses for approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thanks very much. And moving on to some substantive changes to the handbook. And who is bringing those forward? He's right back there. Hey, Mac, if you would like to bring those handbooks. I was looking around for you. I wasn't sure where you were.
I forgot what it's like to be in these meetings.
If you could, you could take them.
Here, you get to nod off.
Get a microphone over there for you.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, these are the substantive changes that we're seeking. I guess the action is to endorse them for integration into the revised faculty handbook.
Okay. Any discussion on these items? Are we going to take these one by one? I'm not sure how they've been done in the past in Senate.
One by one.
Okay, one by one. So one by one, let's do the conflict of interest item first. So is there a... So we've had a motion to move this forward. Okay. Thank you. And a second?
Second.
All right. So any discussion on the item for conflict of interest for the amendment? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approval for the conflict of interest amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Move on to the second item, continuance and early tenure. Can I get a motion for this one, please?
Motion to endorse, approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. And any discussion on the item for continuance and early tenure? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of approval,
yes.
Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Moving on to the third item, which is handbook use. Can I get a motion, please?
Second. Yes.
All right, and is there any discussion on the handbook use item? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of approval for this one, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Fourth item is on promotion committee. Okay.
Second.
Is there any discussion on the promotion committee handbook item? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, moving on to our fifth item, which is lecturer appointments. May I get a motion?
Who's second?
All right, who's second? Okay, and is there any discussion on this item for lecturer appointments?
Yes.
Yes.
The lecturers, they will, this is a faculty rank, right?
It's creation of a new faculty rank, I believe, yes.
And so they have all the, I guess, they'll vote in region elections, as full-time instructors.
This is a discussion that we had within the SEC, and it was brought up that the lecturer title is actually not under state statute, is actually not allowed to vote in regent elections. Lecturer is not included as a specific title, and there are specific titles that are listed, which include professors, associate professors, assistant professors, and instructors, but not the title of lecturer.
Is it within the institution's power to state that, all right, we're creating this rank, but they will have the right to vote in these elections?
Unless they are called something else, then...
So we're creating a faculty rank that can't vote in election that full-time instructors can vote in.
That is what this is currently doing. You are correct.
Yes. No, you may give it. Well, I mean, the discussion about the voting rights issue is certainly a significant one. As chair of the handbook committee, it's my position that creating a policy that conflicts with state statute is kind of silly. Dr. Minner suggested that we could go get an attorney general's opinion and.
No, actually, that's not what I suggested.
Well,
I said it needed to be rewritten, or else you could have a contested election in which you had to seek an attorney general. I see that as a game you want to avoid.
Right, and I concurred with her on that.
Yeah.
So that's where we stood.
Yes, Dr. Emslin.
Yeah.
couple of points. First, the maximum amount of time someone could spend in this rank is about 2 years. It's intended to be a temporary position pending an appointment as assistant professor without a search. Having said that, I'll reiterate what I suggested at SEC, and I'll let the faculty regent comment if she wishes, that I believe that we can handle the issue of voting rights and so forth by internally amending this document to point out that lecturers, for the purposes of voting in regent elections and so forth, will be considered equivalent to full-time instructors. We already do that with positions such as executive in residence in the College of Business. There are scholars of residence, artists in residence, and I believe there are words in the internal T&P documents that classify those individuals as equivalent to full-time instructors. And I'm not a lawyer, but I believe that that would address the issue of whether they were entitled to vote according to statute. But I'll let Faculty Regent add on if you want to.
Well, just to be clear, I think that the intent of this is actually a really good idea because it's clarifying what the standard is to finish your dissertation and become an assistant professor on the tenure track. I think that part's a really good idea, but as pointed out, this creates a new category, a faculty member who will be disfranchised from voting in region election, and that's just not something you can alter internally. Elections are governed by KRS 164.321, and Julie Shadowin is here. She was the Senate chair who worked with me when we amended statute, and that is what it took to re-enfranchise instructors who had in the past voted after a challenge region election in 2007 was set aside on the grounds that our election violated state law by allowing instructors to vote. That was quite hard, as I'm sure Julie remembers. It took more lobbying than either of us ever thought possible, and there is absolutely no chance whatsoever this statute could be amended again for reasons I'll be happy to discuss with anybody off of group time, but it's not going to happen. So I think I'm an advisory member. If it were me, I'd pull this back to the committee and I would amend it so that there's no conflict of laws here. But I'd be interested to hear what Senator Shadowin has to say as well. I think it's a real problem.
I don't think we should get into the habit of creating policy before the state statute. I don't think we can round end it by calling something that's really not.
Right. And again, to add, if somebody wished to challenge, if we internally said, no, these two things are really equivalent, then all the aggrieved party has to do is go to the Office of Attorney General. At that point, I see general counsel's hair turning white over in the president's office. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. You start getting OAG in, and you never know what's going to happen. So I see nothing good coming from that.
Yes. I just wanted to add, I think, and Patty, you may remember better than I, that we actually talked about doing something very similar with the instructor position and counseled with the legislators that be and
yes.
Were very strongly discouraged from doing such.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Okay, further discussion or... All right. Well, we do have a motion on the floor, so we will go ahead and vote the motion. So all those in favor of approval of this particular handbook amendment?
Chair?
Oh, thank you very much. Yes.
I'd like to move that we return this to the handbook committee for further consideration before the May meeting. Maybe there's some way out of this that preserves the category, which I think is valuable, but would also avoid any possible... for those of you who have not been here, we did have a contested regional election. It was not one of the shining moments in our institutional system. you think, who's gonna raise a fuss? But believe me, I was shocked that day that I heard that I may have to stay on as regent longer than I wanted to. I move that we send this back for further consideration for the May meeting.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. So any further discussion on that? Okay, then all those in favor of this motion to send the lecture appointments item for handbook back to handbook committee for further consideration, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Just for informational purposes, we have a handbook committee scheduled for May 1st, in which we'll kind of wrap up our work. We will bring some this, maybe, and I think three other proposals, and also the non-substantive or the editorial suggestions as well. So that's kind of the timetable we're on, because the last Senate meeting in May is the last time that you all can act on those changes so that they can be incorporated and become effective July 1st. Is that right, Dr. Emsley? The new handbook?
Yeah, that's
July 1st. Mm-hmm. I think it's July.
Okay. Thanks. Oh, it's great to be back. I love this place.
Thanks. We do have one more item. We have the confidentiality of continuance handbook item. Mac, you can't leave us yet. Motion. We have a motion. Can we have a second? Okay. So any discussion on confidentiality of continuance? Okay. Hearing no discussion on that item, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much. Thank you very much, Mac. Appreciate your work. So we'll move on to our third item, which is policy 1.2180, reimbursement for faculty travel to and from regional campuses. Dr. Emsley, would you like to make a quick statement about that?
Yeah, it became evident in the last few months that our policies and practices on these reimbursements varied widely. So this is just an attempt to consolidate them all into one place. This policy was written largely by CAD, but with input from Jim Cummings, the Chief Financial Officer, to make sure we were compliant with IRS regulations. It essentially says that each employee has a primary place of employment, which by default is Bowling Green. So if you are primarily employed at one of the regional campuses, whether it be Glasgow, Owensboro, or Eton, please get that officially changed in your appointment letter. So your principal place of employment is, let's say, Glasgow. Because then any travel to another campus that is not your primary place of employment is reimbursable travel at standard mileage rates. So if Jennifer works at the Glasgow campus and comes to a Senate meeting, that's reimbursable travel. And there are various nuances about whether then you go straight home or back to your workplace and so on and so forth. So the policy spells that out, what is reimbursable travel to another campus, and also who pays for that travel, and it's typically the host campus, the campus that you are visiting that is not your primary place of employment, who pick up that travel. For visits to the regional campuses is a central fund held by the Associate Provost for Regional Higher Education, which would reimburse that travel. So that's why it's there, and we hope people take advantage of it.
Thank you. All right. I don't think I got a motion to approve that policy. So,
all right. Second.
And is there any further discussion on policy 1.2180? Okay. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approval of this policy, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Budget Committee, we have a charter revision draft. This is a first reading for this. All charter revisions have to come through two readings at Senate and do need a two-thirds majority approval to pass. And I know that Eric was the person who drafted this. Is there someone else to bring this forward? And if not, we can move forward with it. So we've got a motion to approve. Can I get a second? Okay. Any further discussion on the Budget Committee, formation of the Budget Committee within Senate? We did discuss this at the last Senate meeting. Okay. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of this first reading of the Budget Committee charter revision, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. So we will see that again coming up in May for the second reading.
Item number five, we had quite a bit of SEC discussion on this, and since then, the provost and I have had some email conversations and also spoken over the phone at some length about this. And what this is, I'll go ahead and give you the setup for it. I found, quite by accident, that there was a policy, and that was the full-time staff teaching assignment, the 1.5170, you see there's the second item, that was posted online as approved policy, and it was in different form than what the Senate document that showed Senate approval was. And so I've posted both of those for you there in both of these instances. So you can see the Senate-approved document with the signatures, both myself and Dr. Emsley on there, and then the dates, and then the posted policy with the additions. And there's a statement addition highlighted. Both of these are substantive additions. The other item, actually Dr. Emsley went back after the SEC meeting and did a review and discovered this other item as well. Per the policy on policies, as we came to find out in the SEC meeting, it is required that if there are revisions to a policy post Senate discussion and approval, then those items must come back to Senate to determine the extent of Senate concurrence with the final draft. That's why they are back for this post Senate review, as it were. And Dr. Emsley has a statement to make about this.
Yep. This is my mistake. What happens with most policies is we've been bouncing them back and forth. You may recall the research faculty policy, the pedagogical faculty policy, the workload policy, and various others. I've had several trips back and forth to Senate. These were two I overlooked, and I apologize. One was amended at administrative council to allow staff, full-time staff teaching, to be, the policy says limited to 6 credit hours a term. That's still there, but we added a clause to say, except under unusual circumstances with the approval of the provost or appropriate vice president. That change was made at administrative council, and again, my bad, I put it on the website without bringing it back to Senate. The other one, which I then, when this was brought to my attention, I looked through the last years of the policies, and the other one I found that had been changed at AC is 1.3140 and priority registration, and that was a change added again at AC by the Vice President for Research, who pointed out that there were special considerations for students for which priority registration was an essential component of the grant under which they were being funded. For example, the TRIO program specifies in that grant proposal that these students would receive priority registration. There was, in fact, considerable discussion about that during the priority registration process, but we added this section to the policy at the request of the Vice President for Research, and again, I apologize for not bringing it back to the Senate sooner. So the action before you per policy and policies is to indicate the extent to which the Senate and other consulted bodies concur with the final version of the policy.
Thank you, Dr. Emsley. Obviously, there was some concern, which is why it was brought up at both SEC and now Senate. As you can imagine, the concern being that this perhaps has happened previously. It has happened 2 times this term. The review, I know, was done on this particular term, and it does make me curious about previous terms to determine if there have been... I understand back in this previous term of Senate, but it makes me curious if there have been other instances of this. Certainly it's concerning as a faculty member and as chair of the Senate that changes, substantive changes, would be brought in and not brought back before this body as is required by policy. So one of the things that I would like to see, and we will get with Senate concurrence on these items here in just one second, one of the things that I would like to see is for some way to for us to have a check system in place that we can actually make sure that the items that are posted are the same items that then came through Senate. And we'll have to work that out and determine what that is unless someone has a best idea here that they would like to propose in just a moment. But I would certainly like to see that we have a check in place to ensure, because certainly as Senate Chair, I'll be honest with you, there's not enough time in the day for me to be able to go back and check all of these items. But if we can develop a system where that happens, I think we'd all feel a lot better about it. And just it keeps us all in check.
Again, well, the system exists, and the system is me, and it failed in this case. But the system is, if a change is made by any group such that the final version of the policy is not the version that group was reviewed, it's my responsibility to share the final version with that group and seek their concurrence. So, yeah.
Well, this might just be some support then to double check those things, because of course we all do make mistakes. We're all human. So, yes.
Perhaps you could use some sort of software to do
name, please.
Smith. We could use a software like many of us use for Authenticate, where you can compare two documents really quickly. And it automatically brings up any differences between the two documents. That may be useful.
It is possible that we may be able to create some system where somebody or some body within Senate could be responsible for that. And I appreciate that suggestion. Is there any further discussion on these items before we move toward concurrence or non-concurrence, as the case may be? Okay, we are doing votes for concurrence. So if you are in concurrence, I use that word because that is the word in the policy on policies, and there was some discussion about that. So if you are in concurrence with the item as changed, so the posted policy with the additions that are highlighted, so for policy 1.3140, if you are in concurrence with the changes that have been made to that document, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed to the changes on that document? Okay, so we have a unanimous concurrence on the changes for policy 1.3140. For policy 1.5170, all those in concurrence with the posted policy with the additions highlighted, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed to the changes to that policy? Okay, so we have Senate concurrence with those changes. And Dr. Emsley, I will get you an email stating that. Okay, so we have two more items. And in order for us to do these last two items, what we need to do is get our new senators in place. So here's the musical chairs, if you will. So all those senators who are staying on for next term can stay in their seats. Other senators, if you would like to take a seat in the peanut gallery, we do need to make sure we maintain quorum through this. So,
Margaret, don't we do the officers?
No, we.
Old Senate can leave, Margaret.
Oh, okay. Old Senate can leave. Okay. Old Senate can leave. This is your bonus day then. So, but if you are staying for a second year, okay. So basically, we've got our at-large senators leaving.
Do we have to have
new senators, please take a seat at the table.
Eric, motion to
you get to get the new view. Okay, can I go ahead and get
let me just get a show of hands of people just so we can make sure for ourselves, for our numbers, our senators who are current senators, so not on for next term. Show of hands, please. Current senators. Can we get a count of those?
Can you count for me?
Oh, right. I'll help you. I'm counting current senators. We're just making sure we have quorum for Jarvis. So, current senators.
Where's the sign-in sheet?
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're just making sure we had quorum to adjourn, so I think we're good.
So you need a motion?
Okay. So would we...
Can we motion to adjourn the old Senate, bring the
Okay.
Yeah, you need to do that.
Let me get a motion to adjourn the old Senate so we can bring in the new Senate.
Second. 36.
Okay, and we've got a second. All those in favor, current senators, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? All right. Yeah. Welcome, new senators. Welcome, new senators. We do have a couple of items, so we'll get to the caucusing in just a minute. We have the elections for new Senate officers. I am willing to serve a second term. I have a second year, so I came in as my first. I'm not going to run it. I'm not going to run the election. I just wanted to make you aware of that. And I don't know about my vice chair and secretary. They will let you know. So we will go ahead and start with secretary and move up.
Okay.
No, you
want to
start at the top.
Okay.
Oh, we did it top.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we are currently looking for someone who's willing to serve as the vice chair, or the chair, sorry, of Senate for next year. Do we have any nominations? Lauren? Margaret Crowder has been nominated. Do I need a second?
No.
Okay, so we have Margaret Crowder nominated. Do we have anyone else interested or who has a nomination for this position?
And feel free.
Okay. Can we just take an oral vote?
Someone can move to close nominations.
Can I have someone to move to close nominations? And a second. Okay, the nomination is closed. All right. Can we do an oral? Sorry, God, I'm not good at this. Can we do the oral?
You can move for election by acclamation.
Okay. Can I move for an election by acclamation, please? And then all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Oh, congratulations, Madam Chair.
It's a dubious honor to be sure. Who did the second just a moment ago on the...
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. So now we move on to election for vice chair. And so do we have any nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Jennifer
Hanlon. Okay, so we have... Do you accept the nomination?
I accept.
Do we have any other nominations for vice chair? Okay, hearing no other nominations for vice chair, can we get a motion to close nominations? Okay. And so can we get a motion to approve by acclamation, please? Is there a second? Thank you. All right. All those in favor of approval of election of Jennifer Hanley, who's done a great job as vice chair, by the way, for the year. So, hey, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? You'd be crazy. Thank you very much. Thank you for agreeing to serve again, especially knowing that I'm up here. So.
No, it's my pleasure. And again, I should have mentioned that Margaret has done an excellent job as well. So,
thank you. It's about driven me crazy, so I may lose my sanity within the next term. It's completely possible. Actually, I've probably already lost my sanity to agree to do it a second year. Move on to secretary. So are there any nominations for secretary?
I nominate Heidi.
Heidi, do you accept the nomination?
I guess.
I was enthusiastic.
I heard an I guess. Are there any further nominations for secretary? Okay, so we've got a motion to close. Can I get a motion to approve by acclamation? All right. Got the, who was the second? Sorry. Okay, all those in favor, re-election of Heidi Alvarez for secretary for next term, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Same slate. All right. We have one more item, which is the caucus for standing committee memberships. Now, we've got actually some paperwork. So what we need you to do, though, is we're going to need you to hold off on doing this for just a second. We're going to need you to get into groups by college, and it's kind of best if you try and do that, you know, by table if you can, group together by college. So you may just have to identify people you know are in the same college and move to that location. So the caucusing is done by college. We have several standing committees that we will need to fill positions on. It is absolutely the best possible world for us to have those standing committees filled and ready to go for next term. The last thing you want is to have empty slots on the committees when you get started, because then you just can't get the work done that's necessary to start the term. So please step up, volunteer, learn a little bit more about your Senate and about being on committees, or if you have experience on those committees, identify that.
Where they're going.
So let's go ahead and have.
Make sure the new
senators
have signed in.
Whoa, I've got, apparently,
Health Human Services.
Here is Ogden, and Potter is over here, I think, somewhere. University College is over here at the end. I guess. I don't know, CBS right here.
New senators have signed in. If they have not signed in, just sign them up here.
Okay.
I'll tell them to write it down on the sheets and bring the sheets back in.
I will. Just a quick reminder, all new senators, if you have not signed in, you will need to sign in. If you have not done so, come up and see Heidi at the front. She's right here, and she will have something for you to sign. So all new senators, if you have not signed in, we do need record of you being here today, so if you would sign in. Also, the sheets that you are getting for the committees, just fill out those sheets for the committees and then bring them to the front. We're getting them handed out to you, so they're coming. So who is it? Gordon Ford. Is there any more Gordon Ford right over here? Any Gordon Ford here? You guys are Gordon Ford.
Thank you.
Interested in the Senate charter descriptions of the individual committees, I have those up here. I have plenty more copies.